from the heart of the Forest City, this is a Craig Needles podcast brought to you by Lexus of London. Now here's your host, Craig Needles.
It is the Craig Needles podcast. It is time for the Friday Roundtable. Of course, our podcast is brought to you by our friends over at Lexus of London. You can find us at londonnewstoday.ca and classicrock981.com. You want to look for us there, plus your very favorite podcast app. And we are thrilled to be joined in the studio today by former city councilor Hollywood Cheryl Miller, political insider Ryan Goss, and Mojdeh Cox, who's an activist in the community, joining us as well. Lovely to have all of you here on a gorgeous, gorgeous Friday afternoon in October. Thank you for being here.
Yeah.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, we had winter. We had November last week. Yeah. So we're going into August.
Yeah. I'll take it.
Yeah, we're gonna have sunny and 20 for the next couple of days. Great. I'm ready to go.
I'll close my pool though.
Yeah, that's too bad. the water might have been a little chilly right now, if I'm being honest. But let's get into the news of the week. And there's a few different things I want to talk about this week. And I want to begin with what's going on with London Police. So there are two stories, and I want to be clear, I don't think these two stories are necessarily interwoven, but there are a few different London Police stories to talk about this week. One, we've got the chief of police, Steve Williams, saying that he is going to be retiring in May, which is pretty much standard practice. You know, you do the job for 3-4 years and you have kind of a 6-month runway for when you're going to exit the job. They find somebody in the meantime. That's fine. That's pretty standard. But while this is going on, we also have, again, a national news story about the potential of London Police not properly handling a sexual assault case. This time TSN reporting on a couple of hockey players that may have committed an assault. There was a peace bond issue in one case, so you can say that probably someone did commit an assault there. The woman saying that she didn't feel as though police handled the case properly, police saying they did. This on the heels of what happened with the Hockey Canada mess. Where do you think the public stands on how they feel about London Police right now is my question. Because I've said this to somebody this week. It feels like every time there's a story where the police do something where you're like, oh, okay, this is good. It's a one step forward, two steps back type of thing. Where do you think the public stands on their feelings on how London Police are policing this city right now?
Well, I think they're probably dealing with it's kind of mixed messages all over the place. Because first of all, we need more police officers. What do we need them for? For just everyday occurrences, but the police officers in London are so very busy with homeless mental health issues, which they shouldn't be involved in. So that's one part of the issue. The other part of the issue is the sexual assault that has been, it's a he said, she said kind of situation with the police saying, no, we've done it, we've handled it all, it's all done. I don't think it's ever going to go away. To me, it's got to be dealt with differently than just simply saying, yeah, it's all gone. It isn't all gone. It's still there. And it hurts the police and the everyday officers out there because that's what people think of.
So are we surprised when institutions like policing aligns with cultures like the one in hockey that we're trying to address and dismantle right now? In no way am I surprised to hear and read that our police services are upholding their initial investigation. I just want to run through, I don't know what the public thinks. What I do know are the facts. So if we're looking at the police department in London running a review of sexual assault cases, which they have done, and they're forming an advisory panel now, I believe, on this issue. 1,030 unfounded cases of sexual assaults between 2010 and 2016 by the London Police Services. There's two top codes in the review of these sexual assaults. 70% were coded as unsubstantiated and not on reasonable grounds. 37% were when the complainant had pulled out. So if we're thinking about that and looking at those numbers, and this is going back to 2016, before our true awakening of Me Too, of understanding that we have to address these things differently, looking at those numbers, do we have trust in policing broadly? Not with those types of stats. 2021, 572 incidences of sexual assault. And this is police
These are their own numbers.
Correct.
Yeah.
This is what they have released. So long as we have police overseeing police, so long as we don't have a true acknowledgement that and naming the harmful legacy of policing and the culture of policing that we need to address, the systemic issues that we need to address within the culture of policing, I don't think there's really an appetite for change. So we can turn over chiefs of police time and time and again. Nothing against them personally. This is bigger than them. And we have to address some really high, overarching issues. Sorry for taking up so much space.
No. I'm glad you did.
You're very well spoken on the issue, and you know I completely understand your position and your argument as well. I will say, full disclosure, I worked for the RCMP for 10 years, a decade here in London, and as a public servant, know many police officers, many of them I consider friends, and I think that there is definitely a need for more work to be done, especially when it comes to how these type of investigations are handled. There has to be way more education that takes place and way more training. I was actually a training advisor for police for a brief time with the RCMP, and I know that the training is so critically important and more needs to be done, and the subject matter experts that are being brought in need to be the best of the best so that we can reframe the conversation. What I will say about London Police is right now they have a absolutely thankless job. It is very, very difficult what they are doing in our community right now. They are grossly understaffed. They are burnt out. It's never good enough. The response times right now in London are I think the police will admit this wholeheartedly, they're deplorable. Like, if you're calling 911 and you're seeing a police officer in 2.5 hours, and that is, I was told, is a good response time. They're like, wow, that's actually good. 2 hours. You can imagine what can happen in 10 minutes, let alone 2 hours. That's a big problem. And that shows that the system's broken. The resources aren't necessarily there, and that there needs to be a rethink. We need to hire more officers, number one. I know that that's, you know, a divisive position with some in the community. However, I will say that when those new officers are hired, that I also think that we have to be examining how we are training these officers, how we're bringing them up to speed, how we're introducing them into the field of policing to work with the current police that are there. I will say that my personal dealings with Chief Williams have been phenomenal. I actually have a massive amount of respect for him. He is someone who takes constructive criticism, who listens, who actually wants to get to the bottom of issues and try to fix the problem. Can one man or woman do it alone? No, they can't. And this is, you know, Mojda, you said it very well. There are systemic problems that need to be addressed and changes that need to be made. But one thing I will say is, in my dealing, I don't know if I'm here in my dealing, just dealing with the public, both in my day job and running a municipal campaign right now. I've heard from a lot of people that their biggest thing is necessarily not the trust in the police. It's not the trust that the police are going to be there when they need them. So, and I think that that's something that needs to be addressed. There needs to be a better line of service, and more resources and more police officers will help with that.
I think that it's not just police officers. I think we have to look at policing differently. When you're being attacked or someone's coming at your house or anything, you're going to call police. When you're being raped, are you going to call police? I think that what we need to look at is policing in a different format. We need to perhaps hire more people who have the expertise to work with the police department. So it isn't just a policeman. There needs to be a policeman and a counselor or someone else go out there. Because nobody calls the police for a good news story. It's always about something bad happening.
And this is the part that frustrates me, is there is agreement from police chiefs, from policing unions, from mental health advocates, from community advocates that would say, hey, look, if someone's having a mental health crisis, we don't think the police should be the first person to show up.
Yep. Absolutely.
Correct.
Yep. Everyone seems to agree on that. Yep. So how have we not figured it out if there's no division on that particular point? How have we not? I know that this is a complicated thing as far as how does it work. I know the Green Party talked about it a little bit during the last provincial election we had. But I just don't understand how we have not figured out that there are better options than having the police go to these things. It's expensive, and it's not the right outcome for the person who is suffering from the mental health situation in just about every single case. And the police don't want to do it. Like, there's a lot of reasons to not do this yet. we continue to do it. Yeah. It seems like a bad idea.
Yes. Yep. So here's the thing. $15.7 billion is annually spent on all levels of policing in Canada. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if we're talking about addressing deeply rooted socioeconomical issues in our communities, it's that kind of money that I think police forces do not want to relinquish. It's not about relinquishing those funds. We can redirect those funds, and I think that that's a great recommendation that's floating around right now. People need to reframe the idea of what that looks like when we reallocate funding from police. It's not about defunding the police. It's about reallocating those funds to experts. We have to stop rolling up to McDonald's drive-through for an oil change. That's what we're doing mm-hmm. when we're calling police out to crisis moments like sexual assaults. It is a criminal act, so we do have to have their involvement immediately. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you something, 37% won't be pulling out of those investigations if we had experts on the ground who are able to, in a trauma-informed way, deal with folks. So I think it's a lot about relinquishing power when we're talking about $15.7 billion that we're occupying on services that aren't adequately meeting the needs. We have consistently in London, as reported by London Police, increased the hiring numbers of police officers in the city, which is great. 95% of London's police services budget goes directly to staffing.
Right.
How much of that goes to their education and training? Well, and what kind of education and training are they getting?
Yeah, but that's going to be in a different pocket because it isn't like one of the things that I haven't researched, and I should, and I admit it, is what does the police act say? Is there latitude in that act to take officers that are different? I mean, we have community officers that work out in the community. And I think that it needs to be examined provincially. Well, it needs to be looked at for the whole of Ontario because it's not just London's issue. It's throughout the province. So I think it stems from something. And I don't know if it's a union issue, if it's a desire to keep it all in-house, but we have to ask for that and sort of demand a little bit more.
I think, too, that you hit the nail on the head with talking about, I think the messaging is so important when you're talking about trying to redirect funding. The whole defund the police narrative, yeah. I think, was a communications nightmare, if I'm being honest with you. Yeah. I think that the individuals and what they were fighting for in the defund the police movement, their message was getting lost because everyone just thought that means taking money away from the police and that we just would have no police on the streets. And it wasn't talking about, like you just said, redistributing funds within to training or to different areas within the budget. So I think that term defund the police for me is not a term that I support. And we've heard a lot of people say that. However, what I will say is that I think we can look very creatively at ways that unique programs that would work. So for example, we look at the COAST program and the success that the COAST program has. Expanding the COAST program with when we're dealing with mental health challenges right. is very important, as well as when we're talking about trauma-informed response. I think I'm by no means an expert, but I think if we look at creative ways to have people paired with the police that are experts in this area that also can do almost real-time training that can intervene and say, okay, we're going to handle this situation. This is real life, not in a classroom. This is how we're going to handle this as we're rolling up, or even in the middle of it, or even afterwards doing a debrief. And then the officers are going to learn from that, just as they're learning to deal with mental health. When I talk to friends of mine that are dealing with it, they're like, I'm learning every day on how to handle X, Y, or Z situation. I should also say that obviously, as a white male, my interactions with the police are very different than other communities within London. So I will say that too, that, you know, my outlook on this is different, and I admit that I have a bias. However, I've also worked directly with police, actually in the system. I've seen the shortcomings, and I've seen the great people that also work within the organization.
Problem is that they're elsewhere. They need to be located right in the police station.
Yes.
If you're going to work and the call comes in,
I agree with you 100%. They're in the car with you is what I'm saying. They're totally in the passenger seat.
Absolutely. Yeah. They have to be part of the solution at the site. That's what I'm saying. Can they do that? Is there an issue with
Can we clone COAST, right? To work more on the, you know, on the sexual assault side, on trauma-informed response. I don't know. I'm not a policing expert. I don't know what that would cost. I don't know. But if we're looking at distributing some of that money in terms of training. Is that something that we could look to do? Could we try to pilot that? I don't know.
And you know, Mojde mentioned the $15.7 billion. I think when people say, oh, not everyone, because defund the police means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. Yeah. But to me, it means, hey, how about we spend some of that $15.7 billion on people who are trained to deal with mental health issues, people who are trained to deal with sexual assault crisis, things a lot. And so instead of spending that $15.7 billion on police officers, we spend it here. That to me is the main definition of defund the police. And okay, like that, I think that there's something to be said for that. But it gets lost in the messaging because it turns into, oh, defund the police. You mean defund to zero? And that's, I don't think that's what we need to do. I don't think that's what we should do. So that like you said, Ryan, from a communications perspective, it gets a little bit lost in the messaging. And some of that is I think, deliberate from people who are trying to just undermine the messaging. But people that are not necessarily completely connected to the issue would say, oh, defund, you mean defund to zero? No. But just take some of that $15.7 billion and spread it around.
That's why I want to know if you can do that.
Yeah. And well, if you can't, then we got to talk to the province of Ontario.
About how we can. Absolutely.
They do. They have the autonomy to spend their budget the way they wish to a certain degree. There is no limitation on what you can teach colleagues.
It's not teaching, it's bringing them in on site so that they're not uniformed police officers, but they're part of the response team. Mm-hmm.
It's worth investigating, so maybe we should talk about this offline. I do want to mention one other thing. A local community member the other day by the name of Shane D'Souza, a black man, was harassed by police this week as he was working. He's an Uber Eats driver, and it was in the evening, and there was a police matter in the area, and the area was not cleared, and he was harassed by police. And he has now filed a complaint against the police services, those particular officers with their internal oversight. And which I just think is, in what world do we have the same body overseeing itself in conduct? We have many powerful institutions doing
teachers,
that.
Nurses, doctors,
we have many powerful institutions, but there's no recourse. So I just want us to, it's 2022. Almost 2023, and it just sounds so familiar, Craig, because I remember you and I, we interacted in 2016 around carding, and the way that London officers, with comparison to the statistics of 2016, looked like something around 16% racialized folks, but black and indigenous folks were absolutely disproportionately harassed by police, brutalized by police locally. So we're still dealing with the same issues, 2016 versus 2022. I just want to bring that up, and I think it's worth mentioning.
I think that is absolutely worth mentioning. I want to move on to a couple other topics, but before we do that, I just do want to remind folks that the Craig Needles podcast is brought to you by Lexus of London. Lifestyle with the drive. Your new Lexus is patiently waiting at Lexus of London, the award-winning Lexus of London. You can find them at 1065 Warrencliffe Road South and online at lexusoflondon.com. Let's talk about what's going on in public schools. Stephen Lecce comes out yesterday and says, hey, I know these math scores on EQAO look bad, but don't worry. There's a $200 check in the mail if you want it. In the midst of the government being in an ongoing labor dispute with QP, which we talked about a little bit on this podcast last week, Mojde, your reaction to what Stephen Lecce had to say yesterday?
Well, I mean, I'm glad that we all kind of giggled a little bit, although I didn't see Cheryl's face there.
Shaking my head.
Yeah, so we giggled. Ryan and I were in giggle mode there. I mean, are we surprised when we look at the $1.3 billion decrease in education funding out of our provincial budget? When we do that, and we've seen a downward trend of like literally depleting our education system year by year, we take away and we have no problem talking about defunding special ed services. We have no problem talking about defunding the arts and culture pieces in schools. I know that the school board locally is doing an excellent job with trying to build out capacity with teachers and understanding equity principles, yet we're still, you know, faced with a lot of problematic behaviors. So I'm not shocked. We are draining a system and then wondering why it's not working the way it should. First of all, what is the value of these standardized tests in the first place? If we don't provide the
That's
educators,
an old discussion.
Absolutely,
we tried to beat that up years ago.
Of course,
it's like $30 million a year cost to run that.
Proofing.
I think it's 35 now.
It's
a lot of money.
It defies every equity principle. So when you were talking about boards putting out these equity statements and then saying we're going to just standard standardized testing and base our success on that is, it's backwards, it's ludicrous, it's outdated, and frankly, I'm an active and engaged hands-on parent to four, and I don't place a whole lot of emphasis on in getting my children geared up for these standardized tests. And I don't value them in the way that I value educators. And I believe that they should be better equipped so that our children are learning in a different environment.
Can I jump on of that? Course. Sorry, Cheryl. Go ahead.
Yeah. No. I'm just going to say I really have nothing to say with this. The only thing I can say is it's STUPID, and the money's going towards math, but perhaps it should be going towards English and spelling too, because it is STUPID. Mm-hmm. You're paying parents off. This is such bullshit. I can't even talk.
I love it. You spelled out.
You spelled, yeah.
I love
now,
it.
Keep in
Cheryl,
mind, the CRTC great. Can't do anything to us here.
Yeah. I agree with everything you both just said. And let me tell you, as Craig, you and I both have children that are that are the same ages. I just dropped my son off this morning to kindergarten. He has two ECEs in his classroom. He has a teacher as well. And the fact that I know what those ECEs are getting paid every day, I think about it. When I see them every morning, I think about it. And I think how disgusting it is. And I think that you're trying to buy me off with $200. Or if you have multiple children, $200 a time. How about you just take that money and reinvest it into a fair contract? Like the fact that they are getting paid. Like, you know, there's always the argument, well, you know, teachers are paid well, they have good benefits, they have this. If you want to have that argument, that's a entirely separate issue. But if you can look me in the eye and tell me that these ECEs, the work that they are doing, they're compensating accordingly, I'm just sorry. We won't see eye to eye, because it's an absolute joke what they're making. Okay. And I can tell you, that's the last job in the world that I would want. I don't know how they survive.
Before you jump down the rabbit hole, let me say something that we all need to realize. Mm-hmm. The advertisement says, on average, they're paid $39,000. Mm-hmm. They don't define the average, whether it's part-time and full-time. Mm-hmm. So stating that, that's not true. Not all ECEs are making $39,000.
No, sure. and I know that that's oftentimes a starting number, but Cheryl, the fact that even if, in my humble opinion, even if they're at 50, like, let's say that you know, a midterm one's at 50, it's way too low for the amount of kids that are in their classes these days and the amount of work that they do. It's not a fair wage for the work that they are doing, and there's so many pressures. You were a trustee, you were chair of the board, you know all the pressures that go on in the school system. And it's only getting worse and worse and worse, and it's a crumbling system where we're losing what, when you were running the board and when I was in school, all the great things that we had, they're like almost not existent anymore. My son's school, they barely have any sports teams, anything. Like the community that was there, that I know you were on parent councils too, that was so hard to build, but was there and present because of dedicated people like yourself, is almost non-existent anymore. Don't get me wrong, there are exceptions. I'm not going to blanket statement it, but come on, there's so many cracks in our education system right now. So many cracks in our healthcare system, which is a totally different subject. But we need to stop sending out checks for license plate rebates and $200, because here's the thing: like, we all know that the vast majority of that money isn't going to be going to tutoring. No, it's going to be going to anything but
Christmas is coming.
Precisely. And I noticed the timing is very interesting as well. Yeah. So I just think that it's so short-sighted. And
it's
we could put it into so many different areas. And it's actually disgusting that you're also doing it. Well, you're also saying that I'm going to give you 1% or 2% raise when we're looking at, you know, the challenges that are there right now. Just my humble opinion.
I will say this, and then I'll have everyone see it way one more time, then we got to go because we're hitting the end of the clock here. I said on the podcast last week, ECEs and custodians and school administrative staff, those are an inconvenient foil for the Ford government. Teachers, there's going to be a lot of people saying, oh yeah, those teachers make too much money to get summers off, forget it. If you're going to fight them on money, I'll be on your side. Absolutely. I don't think you're going to get nearly as much of that with ECEs. And I noticed the same thing in my daughter's class, Ryan.
Well.
The custodians. Yeah. Oh, and like the administrative staff, like they know every kid's name. They know every single mom and dad or whoever's coming to pick up the kids from school. They know everybody. Like, these people are worth so much to their schools. And if they're out of the game, it's going to be the government who takes the heat for it. It's not going to be the unions. I'll tell you that right now, at least in the vast majority of cases, especially with parents. It's going to be the government, not the unions, that take the heat.
Yeah, I think it's worth mentioning that the education system itself, workers, most levels of professions in the education system other than administration is very gendered. So it's gendered work and traditionally carried by women. And this is why it's devalued currently by the government in our province today. We have to acknowledge the fact that these negotiations aren't just about wages, working conditions, safety, health and safety. We're talking about schooling in the public education system in the middle of a pandemic. So these workers are not just negotiating wages, although the 1% is ludicrous considering where we are in these times. These workers are worth more, 100%.
They're dealing with mental health issues in the school system like they've never done before. The integration of students is difficult for teachers to manage. They need the ECE, so I'm not going to go on about it, but I agree with you, and I think the problem is they're trying to buy the parents off at $200, and trust me, don't fall for it.
Craig, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think this might be the third rail for them because eventually you say enough is enough. I agree. You're going to take on the teachers union. As much as I respect teachers and love them, that is communications gold for the Ford government because everyone's going to be like, you're treated well and
you're on the sunshine
exactly.
List, blah, blah,
and
blah,
so
blah.
You know what? Like you know, what's the difference between 1% and 3%? But like we're talking at like on the pay scale, we're talking some of the bottom rungs in the ladder. And frankly, they're the ones that are carrying our kids up that ladder. I've literally watched it. Hudson's my oldest, so he's 5. And I haven't had the experience in the school system as a parent. So the respect you have once it's your own child going through there and you kind of really start to take stock at what is happening for these ECEs, for the custodians, the administrators, the custodians in COVID, like the work that they did to keep my son's school clean, it was unbelievable.
Wow. I wish I could talk more about this, and there's some other stuff that I wanted to mention for election and whatnot, but we're just right up against the clock. Real quick, one sentence, anything you're watching for Monday, Cheryl, for election?
I want people to vote because I'm really concerned about the people that are not going to vote.
Mojde.
I want a plus one Cheryl's voter turnout that I'll be watching, and I'm going to be watching out for the trustees.
Yeah. Speaking of school board, there you go. Ryan, you get last word on that.
Please vote. There voter turnout is so, so, so important, and we need to make sure that it's not embarrassingly low. Please get out there and vote. It took me 3 minutes. Vote.
And that is all the time we have here on the Craig Needles Podcast, which is brought to you by Lexus of London, lifestyle with the drive. Your new Lexus is patiently waiting at the award-winning Lexus of London, 1065 Warrencliffe Road South, and online at lexusoflondon.com. We'll talk to you for an election night podcast here on the Craig Needles Podcast.
The Craig Needles Podcast is a presentation of the Blackburn Media Podcast Network.